Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
People turn to the Weather Channel app for their weather forecasts every day. But what if the app could forecast more? Like allergy risk trackers and real-time rain alerts. So you know when to stay inside, load up on tissues and podcasts. And 24-hour future radar. So you can plan to get outside, load up on sunscreen and podcasts. Do more of what you love. Don't just check the weather. Embrace it with the Weather Channel.
Welcome back into another edition of The Kickabout here on The Blue Room. I am your host, Rob Vera, joined by my co-host, Mark Mosey. And weird, Mark, I guess I'm saying welcome back in like it's just the normal thing, but it's like welcome back to a one-off Christmas special, a one-off reunion of Kickabout. Not that this will be the final time we ever do this, but I also don't like to make promises. I'm really comfortable right now with all this non-committal stance that we've kind of adopted at this point in terms of Kickabout.
It gave me all the chills to hear you say that again. I don't think I totally appreciated how much I've missed you saying those words until you said them. But it feels apt at the moment, doesn't it, to kind of reconvene? Because I mean, let's not forget that the last time that we did a Kickabout, Everton were fairly okay. I don't think it's any coincidence at all that the part abandoning of the show coincided with Everton's massive decrease in form. I think, you know what, we are with you, Everton fans. We are here for the lads. Some of us go to Finch Farm and greet the bus. Some of us do podcasts that change the entire nature and the mindset of the players. And, you know, hello, Everton players. I know you've missed us. We are now back for you. But yeah, a lot has happened, Rob. I've felt many things in the, what is it, couple of months since we officially sat down and chatted. But
I mean, I don't think we've done it since January, Mark. I think it's maybe December, actually. I don't know that we've done this since December.
I've felt so many things in the last 4 days, never mind in the last 4 months or whatever it's been. And I don't know, I think both of us felt that it was probably time that we actually had a big chat about how traumatic the last few months has been, how incredible the last few days has been. And you know, as much as it could have been better, as we speak now, the day after the Watford game, I think every one of us at some point in our recent lives over the last few weeks would have taken how we all woke up this morning in the assured nature that we have that Everton might just do this thing and stay in the Premier League.
Yeah. Well, I think the only thing I would probably push back on a little is that part of the reason that it made sense for me to stop doing Kickabout every week as well, you know, obviously Everton's form didn't help the cause or the argument much. But as I said before, and you know more of the details, Mark, but I've had a lot of life stuff happening. I think you and I both have had a lot in terms of changes in work and other things that have made. Sometimes you have to make decisions about where your hobbies fall in the greater scheme of the time, the available time that you've got. And so I don't want people to get the mistaken impression that we're just front runners, Mark, because now that Everton are clearly in the one of the best teams in the league now with this amazing blazing form that they're in, that we're just suddenly excited. But it's funny. I feel like this last week, I know, and I want to go on to talk about, you were at Mark, you were at the Leicester game away, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe you were at the Chelsea home, the game at for Chelsea. And so the fans have certainly taken things up a notch. And I want to talk about some of those dynamics for sure. And that may actually be where we start, because I think that to your point about how much has happened and how long it's all felt. This season in particular has felt like 3 years to me. That's the first time I'm saying something like that, and it has nothing to do with COVID. It's just it literally is just the slog of a season. When you're having a great season, it seems to probably fly by fast, and when you're having a horrible season, it's really slow. Yeah. But there is some kind of, I don't know, quickening or whatever you want to call it, that has happened over the last, month and a half or so, because I don't know that I have felt this connected to Everton Football Club in several years, Mark. And it's certainly not because we have a great team, but it's because we've been faced, not just in the way that we've talked about it over the last several years of like, we got to be careful or we might get, into a relegation fight. And we would never end up getting really that close, even in the Sam Allardyce season. It never quite turned into what this season turned into. Like, I think that there is something to that idea that when you suddenly are having to fight for your life, and that's not just in sport, that's just in general, you begin to appreciate that life a lot more when you have to fight for it. And fundamentally, part of that is having to make the decision that this is something worth fighting for. And for all of the gallows humor about, if we get relegated, whatever, and I'm so tired of Everton and I hate Everton, I hate these players and I hate whatever, all the things that we say that feel true, but also aren't actually true, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that the thing I've been most impressed with, Mark, and I want your thoughts on this too. Like, I think that there's this temptation, or maybe not even a temptation, but there's this characterization when the media has started to take notice, especially of the particular dynamics of the Everton fan base over the last several weeks. Everything from the fans just being in boisterous voice everywhere to showing up in droves to greet the buses, to greet the buses leaving Finch Farm before a game away at Watford. If you told me that was going to happen, I never would have believed you. I think that there is a temptation to think that, this was always there, and it was just, now the Everton fans decided that now was the time to press that button and create an environment. And on the one hand, it's true. Like, we do have, for all of the things about our football club that are subpar in terms of the performance, I get I'm biased or whatever, but there just aren't a lot of other clubs that are even close to the same level in terms of not only traditional, but ongoing fan support and engagement. And that volume and that pressure, while it can be a bad thing, can also be in times like this a good thing. I think we should probably acknowledge, Mark, that this is a fan base that has been very, very fractured, not only over the last several seasons, but even this season. We joke all the time about the podcast wars, the Everton Twitter beefs, all of those things. Tell me your impressions, Mark, because you've been living inside of it, really, in terms of living inside the fan reaction at Goodison, away from Goodison lately. But it almost feels like, and I commented on this on Twitter not too long ago, that it's almost like this unspoken thing that's happened amongst our fans, which is we can address the fights and the pettiness and the things we don't like about one another later. Now, all that matters is Everton surviving. Is that the impression that you've sort of gotten in terms of how this fan base has suddenly congealed into a unified force?
Yeah, very organic, as you say. There was no spoken moment where we all sat around and thought, well, this and this have to happen in order for the form to improve. You know, I don't think Everton as a club are daft. They understand what they have in us. They understand how to utilise it, and they've absolutely done that in recent weeks. You know, whatever they've been able to do, going way back to Crystal Palace in terms of, you know, trying to fund Everton fans or organise fans getting down to the FA Cup quarterfinal, right up to champion their every move and every noise that is made in pretty much every game at the moment. And it's even more impressive, I would say, Rob, because I think none of us will ever forget why we are here. And, you know, to an extent, it's important that we don't do that. But we've almost got to the point where all of the negative narrative and all of the things that happened earlier in the season have been totally brushed aside. You know, when was the last time any of us thought roundly about Rafael Benitez or Marcel Brands? You know, it almost seems, for what you've said about how time has kind of just totally altered and the season's been so fractured in terms of being broken up into what feels like a million different segments. But I think we're all collectively agreed in that the latest one has just been something else. I said the words to Matt Jones the other night while we were watching the Watford game: I am not ready for this to end. I mean, we are 16th in the Premier League table, and I am devastated currently that this season's going to finish in 3 games' time.
Really?
We've all been there this season whereby we're all ready to just, you know, pull the plug on the entire thing, stay up on goal difference, put goals scored, whatever it is, just survive. And it doesn't feel like, you know, watching Everton at Chelsea, watching them at Leicester, it didn't feel like a sole survival mission. It was actually enjoyable. Leicester, maybe not so much because, you know, Everton on the road is debatably enjoyable at the best of times. But yeah, Chelsea was just like a football match in isolation. It's like for the 2 hours that game existed for, everyone totally left all of their football baggage, life baggage, whatever it was, on Goodison Road or at the turnstile, and the only thing that mattered was those 90 minutes. Not necessarily what had gone before it, not what we needed to gain out of that game or what had to come in the games to follow. It solely existed as go and enjoy your football club. And that obviously resonated with the players that were there. I mean, the pre-game and the moment where Zedcars kicked in against Chelsea will genuinely live with me for a long, long time. That game, this season will reflect ultimately as very forgettable. And, you know, we've had some great times in recent weeks, but I guarantee at the point of getting back to mid-table mediocrity and the occasional cup run, we'll discard this season as just one of those things that happened, hopefully. But that game is genuinely in my top 5 football matches at Goodison Park ever. It was people will have seen many videos. One of them was Damari Gray winning a throw-in in front of the Bullens Road, and it got the most enormous cheer. And I know that will come for, you know, humorous scrutiny from other fans of other football teams, but it felt as though the 40,000 people inside the stadium just absolutely lived every kick of the ball. You know, the when we score through Richarlison, the fact that it was Richarlison, smoke bombs on the pitch, smoke bombs all over Goodison Road beforehand. It was just wild. And honestly, I think trying to engage football fans when your club is not performing well is difficult at the best of times. We've seen that in recent games, and I think that the one thing that's really resonated with me in the last couple of games, and in particular in Leeds' midweek game, and you know, Rob, I'm sure you saw Leeds' team coach arriving at the game to a relatively modest number of people. That's just a small.
Surprised me a little bit, honestly, just because Leeds are a big. I mean, they're a historical big club too, and I think their fans are just. I think that this has happened so late, and I think it feels like they've lost the faith in this at this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, the one good thing about Everton's poor form and kind of near collapse this season is that we did it early enough to give ourselves a little bit of a chance of digging our way out of it. And
yeah.
Leeds hopefully look as though they're not going to be able to do that. But
yeah.
I think when you compare, you know, annoyingly, we've had to watch quite a lot of Burnley games. Oh.
I never want to watch this much Burnley or Leeds ever again. Leeds at least is somewhat entertaining because it's like the way that like a fiery car crash in a yes. in a F1 race would probably be entertaining, but Burnley, my God, I never want to watch this much Burnley ever again.
I think I want Burnley to get relegated more than I want Everton to survive, and that's how I'm going into the last few games.
Yeah. If it was up to me, I'd have Burnley down and Leeds stay up just because okay. I somehow manufactured via watching Burnley an intense hatred for Burnley, a team that I never even had space for in my brain before the last couple months. But yeah.
But when you watch those games, and you know, in particular the Everton game, but I think was it Southampton they played after us. I've watched Leeds in recent weeks as well. It's going to sound incredibly disrespectful for those teams, and honestly, I don't really care that much, because when you watch Everton games, it's so different. The sense of purpose and meaning to the team, all the coaching staff, you know, obviously the fans. Don't get me wrong, there'll be Burnley fans and Leeds fans and everyone associated with those clubs who are desperate for them to survive, but you can't bottle what this football club and what this kind of mini element of society that is Everton has been like for the last few months. And, you know, I'm just glad that there is a positive element to this, because there's been a lot of toxicity and a lot of negative press, and rightly so, because we've been generally terrible at the sport. But what we've been able to do from a people point of view in the last few weeks has been crazy. You know, I obviously mentioned the Chelsea game where there's plenty of us, but the Leicester game, the only thing I can kind of relate it to from a tangible sense of emotion in the stands was going back to 98, when even when you turned up at Goodison Park when we played that final game against Coventry, you could sense the emotion in the stands before the referee had even blown the whistle. I mean, I remember turning up to that game in the Park End, granted only as a 11-year-old child, but there was people crying in the stands before the game because everyone was aware about how important not only the next 90 minutes was to their football team for that particular season, but how much of an impact this has on your life. And you know, people who aren't as engaged as us, Rob, can laugh at that and say, well, that's a little bit sad. And do you know what, I might look back as an 80-year-old man and think, yeah, you were right. But that feeling that was in, you know, in the concourse at Leicester before the game, getting up to your seat, obviously when we were able to score and ultimately hold on to a result, it's impossible to describe that even to other football fans who don't quite have the sense of importance and the sense of history that Everton had. And we've said in recent times, is that misplaced? It may well be, because this is a 16th place team in the Premier League, and we can't really propel ourselves or put ourselves on much more of a pedestal than we have in the past, because we're just not playing well enough to do that at the moment. But from a connectivity point of view, as you said, between the, you know, whether it's 3,000, 40,000 or millions of Evertonians globally, I think we're all just ready to just be really proud of ourselves. You know, we hope we'll get the opportunity to do that on Sunday, because all being well, it could be the point where we actually start to have fun in our lives again. But we've done this. We've been an enormous part of this. And as much of the players have reciprocated, I think we can all collectively say now that if we weren't the Everton fans that we were, we would absolutely not be in the situation that we've been able to manifest for ourselves.
Yeah, I it's funny how there are certain things about the way in which you analyze sport, and in particular situations like these. I mean, I can't scientifically prove what you've just said, but I know it's true. You know what I mean? Like, I want to go back to something you said before we go on to talk about what is ahead, because I think what's ahead is important to discuss, obviously, in terms of clinching scenarios, if you will, but also within the context of last night against Watford. But you mentioned, Mark, that you know, you actually kind of felt like you didn't want the season to necessarily end, which is such so opposite to how we typically feel this time of year. I think that probably goes back to what we started with, which is that until you have that near-death experience, you don't truly value life. But then at that point, after the near-death experience, you're base jumping, you're jumping out of airplanes, you're climbing Mount Everest. You're suddenly you feel alive. Whereas I think I'm still trying to. And by the way, I know that's true, because I think I have enjoyed. It's weird because, like, there's so much cognitive dissonance here. Like, we're not a very good football team. Like, there's a reason we're in 16th place. You know what I mean? Like, that's fairly obvious. We're 16th, right? Is that where we're at right now? Okay. So that's fairly obvious. It kind of goes without saying that when you support a team that's not very good, that's not a very enjoyable experience. And yet, this is the dark magic of the whole promotion relegation thing, which is that if we were 12th, right, like let's just say we were where Southampton is or even Palace is right now, we'd be doing our usual podcast talking about, okay, God, just let the season end so we can, you know, have a little time off before we start getting disappointed once again in the transfer business and the usual vicious cycle of being an Everton supporter. But man, I think part of the reason I felt connected beyond just this whole notion of having survival threatened and having to really confront what it means to love this thing, to love Everton, and to have that love be truly, you know, to have the existential crisis of it all manifest itself. I think that's obviously the biggest part. But I think also that I think about the times I've been in Goodison. You know, two of those three times have been excellent. One of them was a very droll, you know, I think it was a 2-0 loss to United on New Year's Day. That was the first game I ever went to with you, or first game I ever went to, period. I remember being there with you and Matt and others. But, you know, the other games I've been to, I remember feeling, especially I think we won a late game against Palace that I was at with Matt, and I was set up in Gladys. I remember how that felt. And that was just kind of a fair to spare home game against Palace, you know, back in 2018. And now I think about how intensely emotional that felt for me. And when you are, like many of our listeners that we have in America or abroad, just generally watching it on TV, if you've ever been to Goodison and you've had those feelings, there is something about watching what has happened the last few weeks and your familiarity tangibly with, like, I know what it's like to be in Goodison and I know what it's like to be with these people, and you truly know what it means to to the supporters when you've actually been there live. I'm not trying to shame anyone who's not been able to go over yet. I just encourage you to try to go. But I found myself intensely jealous that I was not there these last few weeks. Like I have not felt that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I look forward every year, you know, bar COVID, to getting back. But a lot of that's because I want to see my friends. Yeah. I want to take a big international flight. I want to be in England. I want to eat what you guys consider to be good food. I want to do all those things. And so that's been the kind of the drive. But lately, it's all been about the football.
Yeah.
Well, it's all been about the football club. It's all been about living and breathing this terrifying yet exhilarating experience with Everton that those of you who have been fortunate enough to not only be there, but will be able to say, like, I think the one area I might disagree with you, Mark, is like, I don't think that this season will be forgotten that quickly just because I think that for a lot of people, maybe including myself, and I'm sure including many others who, you know, are sitting in the stands at Goodison, this will be the season that reminded them what it means, why they care, or even if they don't understand why they care, I don't know that I know why I care, but I just know that this was a reminder of how much I do care. And really, cautionary tales are supposed to be remembered, aren't they? I mean, this season was the to me, you know, I think what 94, 95 is probably the closest, or maybe 03, 04. Were we closer to relegation in 03, 04? I can't remember. I know we finished right before our Cinderella run the next season of the Champions League, but
yeah, it definitely didn't go around to the last day, which I appreciate in kind of relatively recent times we have done, but.
Yeah,
maybe it's because Everton aren't meant to be here at the moment that it feels that much worse. You know, 03, 04, before we'd had any form of success or money, it probably felt that it was kind of a justified position for Everton to struggle. And you know, that obviously wasn't the case in August, but absolutely was a few weeks ago.
So I think ultimately at the end of it, I feel... you know, I'll be curious to see, Mark, how everyone feels once, and I'm saying it, I'm manifesting it like it's going to happen once we are mathematically safe. And maybe that's the next question for you, Mark, is that, you know, like on the one hand, you're like, I don't know that I want this season and this feeling and this ride that we're kind of on right now to end. It's weird how being in a relegation battle and surviving it feels like its own really sad, pathetic trophy. But yet it does feel like we've accomplished something more than those seasons when we finished 10th or whatever. You know what I mean? Like it's an odd feeling that doesn't really make a lot of logical sense, but. I wonder when we are mathematically safe, like I think the question that I struggle with is, does this actually make me hopeful for the future? Or is this just only about this feeling now and that we survive? Like, and Mark, I want to ask you that too. Like, I think where I've landed on it is that beyond the obvious reasons that survival is important, I've felt like because we've done it with a new manager who certainly has not been perfect, but you know, if you know, let's you only need to compare yourself to those around you right now. I mean, Frank Lampard was appointed a few weeks ahead of Jesse Marsh at Leeds, and you know, for as much as Lampard definitely struggled to get results initially. It's about where you land, right? If anything, you know, you jokingly mentioned that Everton did themselves the favor of kind of bottoming out earlier on versus right now, like the way Leeds are. But I think that what's interesting is that it feels like at some point Leeds thought they were safe and didn't think this was going to happen. And that's when, whereas we have been kind of aware for a little longer now that we're in the middle of this. And, you know, if we had just tried to turn up the sense of urgency you know, against Leicester, it might have been too late. You know, I mean, that Chelsea game, I think, changed everything. I tend to believe, though, that, you know, I think that there may be something, and it may be that I'm getting sucked into this idea, but for all of Lampard's, you know, he's not a perfect manager, but yet he's somehow a manager I've grown to like more than I thought I would. And I think that he speaks after matches in a way that I've wanted a manager for Everton to speak for a long time. He sticks up for his team, but at the same time, he's willing to be critical of when they are not up to snuff, or, you know, he acknowledges a more nuanced approach. Yes, like last night, I certainly was very disappointed in not getting 3 points against a side who had not kept a clean sheet all season at home. But at the same time, he kind of put it in perspective and said, look, the performance wasn't good enough, but we were also, frankly, a little tired. Yes, we played a little more defensively, but we have now gotten into a form and gotten this point that it puts us in this position that a few weeks ago we would have given anything for. Like, he says all these things that, you know, that make sense and talk people like me off the ledge, which I think is great. I think Evertonians in particular kind of need someone like that a little bit. But yet I think that balance between being dismissive of it's not really a problem or whatever, and actually being really engaged with the survival fight. I think Lampard has just been open and honest about all that matters is survival. They, according to some that you talk to who work at the club, I mean, he and his staff are staying there all times of night, you know? So like, I think I end up thinking that once we are safe, and I believe that that will happen, hopefully this Sunday, that I have a cautious optimism about the future from the standpoint that now this manager who has done what arguably is the hard work of connecting to this, you know, this very fickle fan base, he has helped us to survive. And I think that will engender some goodwill. Now, all the things that we kind of thought that are the features of Frank Lampard, which are one, his name, which you can laugh at that if you want, but he's one of the very best players to ever play in the Premier League. And the fact that he seems to be truly a player's manager, I'd like to think that now I could start to get excited about, well, what can he now build? With a real commitment, you know, barring the very real possibility that Mashiri sticks his nose in and messes all this up. I like that, by the way, I don't know much at all about the director of football, and it's like that has been put to the back burner. Kevin Thielen's just kind of in the background doing his work and whatever. I'm sure we'll hear more from him this summer, but the angst level has certainly been turned down. Like you said, we don't talk about Marcel Brands. We don't talk about, you know, Rafa Benitez, even that we will certainly want to forget. Yeah. So Mark, where are you left? If we're safe, is it just all about relief, or do you actually look at this and say, you know what? I think now that we've survived and we know what we could have lost and we made it through this toughest of tough times, there's a platform moving forward. I mean, how do you feel about Frank Lampard's Everton after safety is achieved?
Dear gas prices, go take a hike. Toyota is the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. The Toyota hybrid lineup brings efficiency with power and savings with style. Not to mention top tech to help keep you connected. Plush premium interiors and the most advanced Toyota safety features. So, now you know who you're talking to. Toyota, the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years, with a hybrid or electric vehicle built for every driver. Seriously, dear gas prices, do you really think you can stand in our way? Think again. Toyota hybrids. Find yours at Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Based on manufacturer estimates, CY 2000 through 2021 sales.
The one thing I would say is that, you know, obviously Frank Lampard had a pretty difficult time for the first 6 to 8 weeks of being here, you know, in particular on the road, and, you know, arguably that continues now. But I think you could see from the kind of shoot from the hip approach that he actually didn't have an idea about what his best method of going about these games was. And I think for that reason, you know, we saw him play three at the back 1 week, Iwobi at right back the next, and then, you know, go to a 4-3-3 and then try and put Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin up top together. It was just all over the place. And I think the fact that we were so inconsistent, yes, it was because we were at home and great, and then we were terrible on the road, and, you know, attitudes and moods fluctuated for that reason. But there was a constant fluctuation in the setup of the team as well. And I think, you know, he knows the Premier League. He, to an extent, knows Everton, and that will ultimately go in his favour long-term, hopefully. But I don't think anyone could really know the extent of the problems that existed before they were within that bubble. And it was obviously going to take him a degree of time. And going back 3 to 4 weeks, it looks as though that time was probably going to be played out in September in the Championship. And I think the fact that he's been able to accelerate that weeks and weeks ahead of time has been massively to his credit.
Mark, I want to interject with one thing really quickly. I just had this random, I just randomly recalled that I called the new director of football, Kevin Thielen, and it's Thelwell or something. The fact that I am, like, I think Thielen is the name of, like, a wide receiver in the NFL that I just randomly know from fantasy football. But I think the fact that I don't even know his name somehow feels like a good thing. Exactly. I think it's like Thelwell or something like that. I'm not totally sure.
You were making a point, Rob, cleverly, that his role has been so understated and so in the background brilliant that you were able to, on purpose, forget the man's name. And we all appreciated that intentional humor.
He's cleaning up the under 23 setup. That's, yeah, there's things happening there. But anyway, go on, Mark. Sorry. I just felt like I was going to have people screaming at me like, who is this director of football you just named? Like, I know it's, I'm learning. It's fine.
But I know that you joke about the whole cleaning up the under 23s and, the wider setup of the football club going forward. But I look at the set of staff members that we've got. You know, I echo what you said. We know nothing about Thelwell, but for everything that we've seen from Lampard coming in, and, you know, the catalogue of people that have come in on the back of him, there does seem to be at least an intention of forward planning. This isn't your stereotypical smash and grab survival mission. As much as it's had to be that at times, you know, we won't really know until the fourth week of September later this year, when we're 6 weeks into a new Premier League season, about whether all of the good feelings that we have right now are a fad or not. And that's the nature of football. But there is a sense of building and a sense of anticipation. I would say that we've seen enough in the last 4 weeks to make us think there are foundations for growth there. And don't get me wrong, anyone who watched the 90 minutes at Vicarage Road last night will know that there are equally a lot of things that need fixing if we are going to progress to the nature of the football team that we want, you know, be that European qualification or, you know, title challenges, to quote Denise Barrett Baxendale. I think that seems a long way off now, but
hey, you give me 12th next season and I'll be thrilled after this.
But, you know, there's obvious on the ball forcing the issue problems there that are quite frankly going to be resolved by good coaching or good recruitment. Thelwell, as you said, has been brought in to solve half of that, and Frank Lampard and his team to a large extent the other half. But I think that the general reason that we've been able to buy into Lampard, and obviously you would be forgiven now for forgetting that he was ever had an affinity to any other football club in the world, because the sense of connectivity, you know, all of the things that he says, I get that he is going to say, but you can look into the eyes of a Premier League manager, and in recent years, Everton have had a lot of them to be able to do this with, and understand when there is a sense of care and a sense of duty and a sense of responsibility about the man, and it absolutely pours out of him. Me and Matt were still at-
He's drank the Kool-Aid, Mark. That's the thing, is that for whatever, you know, you can go back through the litany of managers and guess what? Even in the last few years, there's been a ton of them. I think what strikes me about Lampard is that, like, I think Marco Silva cared tremendously. Yeah. I think Marco Silva was dying to get this thing right and just couldn't. I mean, it was a great opportunity, couldn't. But in the midst of all that, he, for whatever reason, in some of its personality, it's a variety of things. He never seemed to really be able to get that bit of connection with the fans. And maybe, and I don't know about you, Mark, like, I wonder, has the fact that Everton have been threatened with relegation made his job of connecting easier because we are more emotionally engaged and charged up during this time? That allows him a wider lane to be able to, you know, to kind of be in this with us, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that kind of I'm in this with you approach.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I expect Frank Lampard to go down that route at times, nothing of what he says, which is obviously something that you said has been very positive in terms of everything verbally that has come out of him at every stage. But I have not at any point listened to him and thought that was choreographed. And I'm not saying that other managers previously have done that, but there's a real sense of honesty about him when he talks. But, you know, regardless of the situation that is, whether he's praising players, whether he's getting on their back, which, you know, has been necessary at times, but it really does feel as though that kind of level of understanding is there. You know, you rightly said that I think the collective feeling towards Marco Silva now is one that he obviously cared. There was some... I'm going to go very Bill Kenwright, but there were some good moments under Silva, you know, when we were able to put those five or six home games at the end of a season together. And there was a real sense of this is going somewhere. And I think the two things that probably go in Lampard's favour there and that we've been there with Silva. We know not to necessarily spend the entire summer willing the football club to spend £300 million in the hope that we finish fourth next season.
Yeah.
We are aware that that is not the mental approach to take. But, I mean, as with many things in football, the most important thing is probably just timing. And, you know, if Frank Lampard came in when Silva did, it's probably a car crash. If Silva came in now trying to keep us in the league, it probably doesn't work. There were probably only one or two available managers going back months and months that would have ultimately kept us in this league. And I'll let all of you decide whether Vitor Pereira was one of them. But
there's been Roberto Martinez.
Lots of occasions where Frank Lampard hasn't looked like being that guy, but probably looks like he is going to be. And, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, timing doesn't mean luck. This is not lucky. You know, if everything you've said there about his coaching staff staying late at Finch Farm and, you know, all of the effort that they've put in there, this is through design that they have manufactured this with obviously everything we've said about the help of the wider football club in order to grant a little bit more positivity. But he's done things on the football pitch. Don't forget that. He's brought out Iwobi. He stuck him at right wing back. He's championed Jordan Pickford's return to incredible form. There are footballing things that are happening here, which when you strip away all of the personal things that we've mentioned, gives you that little bit of focus towards next season. And, you know, I go back to the point that a lot of work needs to be done, but I think we're all mentally, even at this stage before survival is guaranteed, we're all looking at not only the football club in a different way, but every single individual player in a different way as well. You know, there are players who we would have all written off 3 or 4 months ago that we're all suddenly now debating in our head whether they're worth that crucial golden one extra year.
Fabian Delph, our new favorite midfielder, right?
This week's, who we've all always loved. On the flip side of it, Rob, there are players there who, you know, we're not in the inner circle of Everton to know what every nuanced move and conversation is, but you do look at players like Dele Alli, and you do look at players like, in particular, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and, you know, in particular with the latter one, if you were to take us back, I'm not even going back to when Lampard came in here, but we had an international break in February, March. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin wasn't involved because of prolonged injury. He was coming back on the back of the international break, and we all sat here and said, him working with Lampard for 2 weeks is going to be the reason that we survive. And, you know,
to look at
the player, and again, I'm not speaking towards the character of someone who I've never met before, but we've seen from these footballers people who are willing to sacrifice everything for those 90 minutes and probably wider to keep this football club relevant. He's probably not one of them. He's probably one that we all say now, name your price, as opposed to he's untouchable. And, you know, call that fickle. It probably is. But you learn a lot about anything in life when it's on its arse, don't you? You know, be it job, family, friends, football, whatever it is, if you can look into the eyes of the people or the scenario that you're dealt with when it's at its absolute worst, then you learn everything. And I'm not saying that we've gone total 180 on some of those players that we've mentioned, but, you know, we say about how memorable or forgettable will this season be. I probably will forget large chunks of the season, but I won't forget individual moments. And I like to think that I won't forget individual players and what they did for us. And, you know, this summer could be horrible, Rob. It could see someone like Richarlison getting tempted by transfers. It could see Jordan Pickford getting taken away. We simply don't know. But
no,
I think I'm fairly content sitting here thinking that I'll never forget some of the goals. I'll never forget some of the saves, in particular that one at Chelsea, obviously, last weekend. And I think from that sort of, you know, that the word that we've mentioned constantly is connectivity.
Yeah,
they've kind of immortalized themselves for all of the most depressing and wrong reasons.
Well, and that's because sometimes the most indelible mark you make on a club or in life is sometimes your last one. You know, I mean, I think that it's weird. Like if Richarlison goes,
yeah.
I mean, he was already going to be remembered fondly, but I want to point out to everyone that it was after – I want to remind everyone again that it was after that humiliating, depressing Burnley game away, where I was convinced that that's probably, probably just about done for us. He was the one who stuck his head – you know, stuck his nose in and just said – we're going to get out of this. We're going to respond. And by God, they have. I think that you can look at players, like you said, there are individual performances. Like I don't think, as the number one Yerry Mina fan in the world, you know, for as broken as his body is, I will remember his performance along with Jordan Pickford's performance against Chelsea for the rest of my life. They were exactly what was needed in the biggest game. And frankly, what we're seeing now was the turning point. That 3 points against them put us in this position. And then obviously followed by the momentum it was created for Leicester. But on a more trending basis, if I ask myself, who are the players most responsible for saving us in the entire run-in? I mean, it's to me, the three that immediately step forward in my mind are Jordan Pickford, Alex Iwobi, and certainly Richarlison. I think that those three have been more pivotal in our fortune. And don't get me wrong, I think Gordon has probably been the best, you know, overall the season. He's got his peaks and valleys, and I can't wait to see him continue to develop. But I'm just generally saying that, you know, you start with Alex Iwobi's just complete, like, out of nowhere, down to 10 men goal against Newcastle at home to win that. Can you imagine where we'd be right now without that win and how unlikely that was? Mm-hmm. I think that these are the stories that you'll remember. And if these guys go, like, I think Iwobi will be with us next season. But if Richarlison goes, Pickford goes, and again, I'm not saying they will, but – I don't care because they've paid back and then some what they needed to in terms of their obligations to this football club. Mm-hmm. I say that as someone who, by the way, has been very skeptical of Jordan Pickford over the years, but he is certainly, ever since he slicked that hair back and got the hair gel going, man, he has been a very different player, and I've loved it. I wanted to though, but you know what? I this is one of those, I don't want to call it a rabbit hole, but I'm just gonna veer off for just a second. Calvert-Lewin is the most fascinating part of this. Like you mentioned Dele, but Dele, even Lampard has consistently said, you know, he's been bought with a view towards, you know, what he can do for us in the coming season. Like they're going to rebuild. They sounds like they want to rebuild him as a player and all these sorts of things. But
you think he's still even here?
What was that?
Do you think?
Yeah, I think he'll be here next season at least. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. No, I actually, though, if you think about Dele, his contributions have been they've been brief ones, but they've been there. Like he's come off the bench and at least been a positive influence. He had kind of that, what was the goal that he, that late, with a late equalizer against, the Leicester home game where he came on and I think he got like the, was it the secondary assist on that? Like he won a ball right on the goal. And yep. Just like at least I can look at Dele and say, hey, you know, he's not been, I think, what we thought, but I think that he has just been in a position where with Allen and Decore and others that they were just already entrenched. I can't remember, but Calvert-Lewin, I don't want to demonize this guy. I'm not going to – I don't want to say he's suddenly a bad guy. But, Mark, if you had told me – and I know I put this out there in the last week or so, but, you know, we've been talking for about, you know, a little less than an hour now about this late surge that is potentially putting us into safety and all of the things and the factors and the fine margins for error that have gone into putting us in a clinching position here pretty soon. If you had told me that Calvert-Lewin would play almost no role in this, going back to what you said about, we thought that those 2 weeks off he had with Lampard were going to be like, I thought, hey, if our best players aren't scoring goals or performing for us, we're doomed. I never thought you could take Calvert-Lewin's expected goals this season that we all kind of in our heads after the last couple seasons thought, well, we're going to get at least 12 to 15 goals out of him and probably more. I know he's had some injury issues, but like it's and every injury is different. But it's funny how, you know, on the one hand, we've been talking about Fabian Delph and Yerry Mina, both of whom are perpetually injured. And yet when they have come back and they have been able to play, they have impacted the game in a really positive way. It just hasn't come together for Calvert-Lewin again, has it? The fact that Salomon Rondon, credit to Rondon, by the way, for finding ways to kind of meaningfully contribute even in small ways over the last, you know, couple months. But the fact that you've got that guy who in many ways is kind of done as a Premier League player, yeah, being brought in to games ahead of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, an England international, mm-hmm, who has scored a bucket load of goals for us the last couple of seasons, of that age, who, by the way, built his entire career at Everton based on his own hard work. He's a self-made, like he's a great athlete, but not a particularly skilled striker and you know, compared to some others. And yet he built himself into this, you know, really effective top-level striker. His disappearance has been shocking to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you think that maybe is that telling? I don't know. I think that there are several players who probably think they'll be somewhere else next season, and yet they have found a way to meaningfully contribute when they've been called upon. Calvert-Lewin has just been MIA since really the first three games of the season, hasn't he?
Yeah. And you know, a skeptic of any footballer looking to leave a football club or at least open to interest in the summer would say, well, we've all heard of the shop window approach, haven't we,
to
actually proving that they are worth another football club taking a gamble. Rob, if you read the English press over here, there isn't a football team in the top 10 that isn't going to be bidding actively for Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the summer. And, you know, that even extends right down to Newcastle.
If Newcastle want to overpay for him, I'm glad to.
Well,
but his value's got to be at its lowest right now, doesn't it? You know,
getting a football team to pay for him, never mind overpay, is going to be something else now. Everton have got this thing to rely on in that he's only been out of form because of injury. So his value is retained, but it's still 65, 70 million or whatever it may be.
Mark, that also starts to sound after a while like when people excused Ben Godfrey's horrible mistake against Burnley by saying, well, he had COVID earlier in the season. Like, fuck that. I'm over that. It's like, at a certain point, I get that Calvert-Lewin was injured and it was significant. And believe me, as a fan of players who deal with lots of injuries, I could not be more, understanding of how these things can impact. But when you actually get back, when you're past fit to be on that bench and you're back on the pitch, like, you knock the rust off a little bit, but the excuses after a while, and it's not just the not scoring part, Mark. He doesn't look close to scoring, does he? He doesn't look close to really meaningfully contributing to the attack.
No, I think that's fair. And you know, if we look at some of the teams that he has been linked with, and I think in recent times, the most notable has probably been Arsenal. You talk about a footballer having to contribute, get involved in the attack. You know, what Arsenal fan or anyone in their football club can look at him at the moment and think he's going to make the missing contribution that we have. And do you know what? The missing contribution for them may well be someone who has done all of the things that Calvert-Lewin did last season for us in terms of not necessarily being overly involved in the play, but adding that final touch. And if Arsenal want to take that gamble, then all credit to them. But I, for my money, he has now worked himself into, he's an August signing for Arsenal as opposed to a July one. He will be the third or fourth choice when they realise that their top level candidates are unachievable. And do you know what? Whether he's committed to Everton at that point or whether he's foolishly gone up the road to Newcastle at that point, time will only tell. But
doesn't he almost have to, like, and here's the other scenario too. Like, is this a classic scenario where this season is so bad and such a write-off that you almost have, like, it almost would seem to be that Calvert-Lewin knows he has to build up his value to get the move / contract he wants. Isn't that better to just try to do that at Everton, being fully motivated next season to kind of prove, frankly, he's got a lot to make up for, right? Like, it's good for him and it's good for Everton because Everton don't want to sell him at low value necessarily either, especially given that won't be enough money to maybe replace him. It's, now, if they lose Richarlison, then they're probably sitting on quite a bit of money. But I don't know. Like, if he goes to Arsenal or I think Newcastle becomes more likely just because they can offer him some crazy weekly sum. And if they, and I think they would be ripe for overpayment and I would sell them at that point. But I think there are a few situations like this. I was talking to someone the other day about, like, I think we get into this whole, get rid of him, sell him, whatever kind of mode. And yet in the same breath, we're like, yeah, but we got to start making smart financial decisions. We got to start doing, you know, you can't just sell at the absolute lowest value unless they're an albatross completely. I think, like, you know, as much as even I the other day was like, well, it's probably the last we've seen of Yerry Mina. Like, I think that if he had, I think it's weird because maybe I think the fact that he still has 1 year and a pretty big salary left on his deal, you know, we haven't been able to get rid of Fabian Delph or Cenk Tosun for that matter, or Nias in the last year, their deals. Like, this idea that you know, this completely damaged asset, whether it's Calvert-Lewin or Yerry Mina or whatever, that some club's going to come in and give them, you know, give us the money we need, or tempt them away. It may be a bit, you know, fantastical thinking on our part. With Calvert-Lewin, he's still on a pretty favorable deal with the club, I imagine. I don't think it's a money thing to get rid of him. I almost think that you just have to find a way to get him firing again and bring a really motivated Calvert-Lewin back in next season versus selling him. But I don't know.
I think the interesting thing, which I don't have the answer for with his contract, would be when it runs out. Because, you know, we've seen clubs being held to ransom by players. You know, going back in time, this used to happen with 6 months left on a player's contract, and now it seems as though as soon as you're in the last 2 years, then suddenly the player has literally all of the power. We're probably going to see that at Liverpool this summer, with people like Salah and Mane able to either manufacture moves or a lot of money for themselves. But
does Calvert-Lewin have power in this scenario? Because he hasn't been productive and he hasn't been available. So, I mean, it just seems like
how replaceable is he? From, you know, not only a numbers point of view of getting a new number nine in, but, you know, in order to achieve the quality that we've been teased with Calvert-Lewin, you probably do have to go out and spend like for like and go and sign a 60 or 70 million pound striker. And then you're further down the line of what 70 million pound striker wants to come and play for the recently 16th place finish Everton.
Yeah, Frank Lampard. That's the answer to all your questions. Right?
I get what you mean about the whole one more year approach for Calvert-Lewin, and to an extent, Richarlison has probably been doing this for a few years. Yeah. In that, if I have this monumental breakthrough season, I'll get the move that I want to the club of my choice, and as a sweetener, Everton will get a great deal for it. That's dangerous for the player in one way, because if you have that further one bad season, if Calvert-Lewin was to do it, for example, and score 7 goals next year and be largely injured for long spells, what's his value at the end of that season? 30 million, probably. And I think that, you know, the thing I like about that is that the player's destiny is ultimately in their own hands in that situation. We have seen it with Richarlison, in that the gauntlet is laid down to the players in the situation of, if you go out and perform, everyone will be happy, and there'll be absolutely no resentment either way at the end of, you know, the season or whatever deal that may ultimately end in a transfer away. But some players respond to that. Some players respond to not necessarily the pressure, but that accountability that they have for themselves. And, you know, accountability, responsibility, all of these things that we say. I'm not saying that Dominic Calvert-Lewin doesn't have any of that, but this has almost been the first mini test of his career since properly breaking onto the scene as an established striker. This is the first time that he's had an established long injury. This is the first time he's been involved in a club who have been in really poor form and have really got their backs up against the wall. And he's been nowhere to be seen. And it's sad, Rob, because, you know, the one thing I don't want to do in particular with this player is constantly fluctuate in terms of my attitude towards him, because I'll hold my hands up and say, prior to him actually becoming a notable striker for Everton, I just didn't see it working with this lad at all.
And you and I were very much early on
that. we were the first in line, Rob, to eat humble pie in that situation and say, he looks as though he is top level. But the one thing we can't do is give each other a call every May and totally flip it 180 about how we feel about Calvert-Lewin. And that's up to him. That's not on us. That's for him to put 3 or 4 consistent years of football into our club and say, well, there's something for you to buy into. That's why I'm an established striker, and that's why Club A or Club B are interested in me, and I have to listen to their offers. At the moment, it would probably be a little bit sour, wouldn't it, Rob, if he was to leave this summer? There'd be not hostility, but I think we'd feel a lot of emptiness towards Dominic Calvert-Lewin if he was to leave this summer. And, you know, to echo everything we've said about Everton so far, no one could have made me believe that going back 5 or 6 months.
Well, and it's funny because I think people need to remember, like, you know, he doesn't get to use the whole young player bit anymore. I mean, he's a few months older than Richarlison, who everyone kind of considers this guy who's ready to take, you know, he could potentially take his next step. Like, and that's the funny thing about the eyeball test too. Like, Richarlison has not had a great statistical season by the early standards he had set at Everton, you know, in terms of goal return. Richarlison at one point had a long stretch where he was injured, but boy, once he came back, he's been ever present. It doesn't mean he's always scored, but the contribution of Richarlison this season, and especially in this run-in, is greater than the sum totals of his goal return, if that makes sense. I think the bar for Calvert-Lewin coming back from an injury situation that everyone felt for him about, and at least at first kind of pointed the finger at the club's medical staff. They mishandled this. What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. The bar was low. If Calvert-Lewin came back in, and even if he wasn't firing, at a high return rate in terms of goals, like, I think people would have said, hey, he's just come back from a big injury, but you can see the effort. You can see the way he contributes in all those other ways. I mean, shit, Calvert-Lewin built his brand when you and I especially were most skeptical, Mark, on doing all the other things but scoring.
Yeah.
But he's not even doing those right now. Like, and I think that's why he's not getting into the team. And it would be a bit, to answer your question, it would be bitter to see his arc suddenly go that direction. Now, the good thing is, the potential upside to all this before, you know, as Matt Jones is throwing his phone into the river at this point, because, you know, we're coming after his boy here, is that, you know, you have to kind of decide who is the real Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
Is it what we're seeing right now, that there may be loads of context to which we don't fully, you know, aren't privy to? Or is the real Calvert-Lewin the one of the two previous seasons, you know, where he started getting that goal return and he started to become the player that he had worked so hard to become? He's 25. He's under contract. I don't think Everton are necessarily under the same pressure to potentially sell him as they would be Richarlison if he really wanted to go.
Yeah.
So I think that you could make the argument that Calvert-Lewin is a bet that you take. You say, look, all of the conditions are there for him to be successful next season. If he's healthy, I don't think he's going to make the World Cup squad given all of this, right? I mean,
no, you assume he's missed too much football.
I think he's missed too much. So you don't lose him in that weird December schedule we're going to have next. Yeah. Like, I wonder if you say, look, you know, he gets his body right this summer. He records a load of training videos in Southern California with his shirt off and he's glistening and he's kicking balls into an empty net with no defenders around him. And we're all like, yeah, fuck yeah, Calvert-Lewin's back. You know, like, maybe he does that. And he has, because of the fact that he is of this age and this is when he should be entering his prime. And when we say prime, we always think about it in terms of his prime performance years. But remember, these players are also thinking in terms of, these are my prime earning years.
Yeah.
To get what he wants, he should be supremely motivated. And the question becomes, does Everton want to have possession of that highly motivated player? I think so in this case. Because Everton have invested so much in terms of development with him, I think that I personally prefer just saying water under the bridge. Let's find a way. Now, having said that, his actions or lack of actions over the last couple months do kind of go back to that whole shop window bit, Mark. Like, do they seem like a player that knows he's going to get this move and is therefore protecting himself? I don't know, say I'm worried about it. I just would say that if he believes that and he's already checked out when Everton have needed him most, then that tells you all you probably need to know about him. You know, like, I don't need a player to say I'm going to be at Everton forever. And I would never, you know, Everton is the greatest football. I would never go to Barcelona. I would never go to United. I would never go to anywhere but Everton. Like, you know, the Seamus Coleman fantasy for some people is something that they just, you know, that they that they base their whole life around. Yeah. I get it. That's fine. But what I do want is a player who, while he is here, plays his out. Like, even Lukaku talked a lot about going away, but when he was in the blue shirt, you can argue he's never been better in the Premier League than he was with Everton. In fact, I don't think it's really much of an argument at all. Like, that's all I want. I don't want Calvert-Lewin to say, hey, I care and blah, blah, blah. Like, show me. If anything we've learned from Everton over the last several years is that the time for talk is over. It's about the players who you know, if you're going to talk, back it up. Or don't talk and just play as well as you can. Like, injuries, and I will say this again, like, some players don't get injured and they're physically Iron Men and, you know, they just don't have problems. Some players are injured quite a bit. Injuries are something you can't really control. It's not a moral value judgment on these guys. I mean, some players have bodies that can withstand, you know, everything. And then there are others for whom a stiff wind will, you know, strain their calf. Yeah. And, you know, it's frustrating. What I want, what Everton fans demand, and what I would argue, Mark, as we go into the final part of this discussion, I want to talk about Brentford to end things off. What Everton fans have loudly and clearly communicated to these players is that when you are on that pitch, yeah, that's when you define your identity at Everton. That is when you define and formulate, you know, get us to formulate opinions about you. I think that, you know, it's the reason, probably, you know, like, you can take Delph has restored some level of goodwill towards him, because while he is not everyone's favorite person and he's injured way too much, at least when it mattered most, right now, he's meaningfully contributed. We talked about Yerry Mina, same thing. No one hates him being injured as much as me, but when he's out there, Everton are good. He's good. That's all I want from Calvert-Lewin, and it's been disappointing, to say the least, that we haven't had that. The fact that we are probably going to survive without Calvert-Lewin's goals, if anything, is a testament to Frank Lampard. You have to almost give him credit for saying, so I've been, you know, when he came in, if you had asked him when he came in, he thought, well, I can play a certain way, which was naive, of course, but I can play a certain way because I've got an England international striker who I know is going to get better and score goals for us. I've got Richarlison. I've got, you know, all these players. And from the beginning, he has dealt with injury crises. He's dealt with players, you know, for whatever reason, who aren't motivated. But it's those who have shown themselves character-wise. Like I said, I go back to Pickford, Iwobi, and Richarlison being kind of the three-headed monster of this thing. If I had told you Alex Iwobi was going to be the guy whose performances, consistency, and character helped carry us through this thing, no one would have believed it. And if you would have conversely said Calvert-Lewin wouldn't score a goal in this run-in, you wouldn't have believed that either. That is how wild this season has been. So, Mark, Brentford, I want to talk about it because I think what kind of stung me a little yesterday, besides being, you know, being time for Everton last night and being the first team to show up away at Watford and not score a goal, I think that while that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, I felt this sense of, you know, it's a reminder that we're in this position for a reason. We have trouble breaking teams down that are comfortable not having the ball, like all these things. And so I felt everyone has been kind of relaxed for two reasons. One, because, and we examined this a little further before we got on the call, the mathematical aspect of this is pretty straightforward. We can clinch as soon as Sunday if we get 1 point more than Leeds get on Sunday, meaning that if they lose and we draw, we've clinched survival.
Yeah.
If they draw and we win, we clinch survival. Like, and, you know, and we've got an extra game. We've got two home, you know, we've got that math on our side. And the second reason, of course, is the Goodison factor. I think where I've been a little leery is that, you know, everyone says it's Brentford and Palace at home. And I'm like, yeah, Brentford and Palace are both ahead of us in the table. And like, they have their shit a little more together. Now, we have beaten better teams than them at home recently. So I'd like to think that is right there, you know, that's what we can kind of mentally rely upon to say we can do this. I think that there is a sense Mark, that is different for someone like you? And I want you to talk about this specifically. I am, as much as I am connected, I am still thousands of miles away. I am seeing a scenario where we're playing two teams ahead of us in the standings who we don't know their motivations or whatever, but we need to get, we can just win the game. I think if we win on Sunday, I think we're pretty much done and dusted. But I think that there's a part of me that's a little scared. However, before we hit record today, Mark, you're not the only one I've had this conversation with. You feel pretty confident that we will win comfortably on Sunday. And boy, that's such a weird thing to say when you're talking about Everton, like, oh, we're going to win. But I think that forget the specifics of Brentford for a second. Mm-hmm. There just seems to be this overriding belief that Goodison and the particular dynamics that have developed over the last several weeks with this home support are going to be the thing that carry this club over the line. You feel pretty confident about that, Mark. I'm feeling confident, more confident because you all are confident, and I'm feeling confident because I look at the fact that Leeds are a tire fire right now, and we have our destiny in our own hands. There are really two things, guys, and I saw this painted in black and white for me today. If the magic number is 4 points, if we get 4 points in these last three games, we're safe. If we get on Sunday one more point than Leeds get, on their corresponding result Sunday, we're safe because of the number of games remaining, whatever. So I tend to feel pretty confident because of the odds. And in the last 2 weeks, we've gone from 53% chance of being relegated, I think as high as 59 at one point. Now we're down to 6%, according to 538, which does all the weird number crunching or whatever. Mark, we go into Brentford on Sunday. You'll be there. You've been at Goodison, obviously, all season. You've been to a lot of the away games. Tell me your feelings about your confidence, your apparent confidence going into Sunday and what it portends for Everton.
With the new Chevy Silverado, you might be driving in this. But with the Silverado's redesigned interior and large infotainment screens, it'll feel more like this. Introducing the new 2022 Chevy Silverado. Find new upgrades. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
Yeah, we're going to smash him, Rob. I'm not going to lie. I'm muni. Matt Jones has definitely just fell over on his run listening to this, but everything that I've known and felt about this team I appreciate a short amount of time in the last 4 or 5 weeks just makes me think that there's absolutely no way. I think the good thing we've got at the moment and the two things that combine to make me so confident are that the level of necessity is obviously still there, but that's been combined with a lot of goodwill and a little bit of good form. I'm not saying we're in electric form here, but we've definitely gone over and above any expected points tally we could have had for X number of recent games. I think the thing that really works in our favour, just to give people a bit of context about my life, I said something before we started recording to you, Robin, that my open tabs on the internet at the moment, apart from this call, are the Premier League table, Burnley fixtures, Leeds fixtures, and Southampton fixtures. And I think I speak wholly when I say that we're all ready to not care about any of those things ever again. But yeah, I just think that there's so much that goes in our favour here. Obviously, current league positioning. From what I've seen of teams around us, I honestly don't think that Burnley get more than 3 points from their remaining three games. I don't think that Leeds beat Brighton on Sunday. Leeds have been relatively poor, leading to very poor in the last few weeks.
And Burnley play Spurs on Sunday, who are very motivated right now to win, luckily for us.
Yes, and you know that their motivation could increase if they get something at Arsenal tonight. But I honestly don't see the Brighton side that I watched against Man United last weekend losing at Elland Road. I get that trying to predict our own team is incredibly difficult, never mind others, but it does seem as though everything's coming up Everton a little bit, doesn't it?
a little bit, but I fear even throwing that out I don't want to tempt the 6% gods, as I call them. So, yeah.
Last weekend in particular, even before the Leicester game, which was obviously on the Sunday, that Saturday was just magical, sitting at home and watching every single fixture that could even slightly affect Everton or a team that play Leeds or Burnley in the next few weeks. It just kept rolling in as the full-time whistles ended, and you just thought, as much as we'd like Everton to do us a job tomorrow, that there was a certain sense for me of kind of inevitability about it. And I don't know, maybe it's just you get feelings before certain games, and Chelsea was one, Man United was one, and you know, there's an edge of those games because of the nature of the opposition that we're playing. And it's quintessential Everton to beat Man United at home when we really need it, and they're terrible, and it's really sunny, and Goodison's really horrible. There's something about the Everton recipe which that ticked all of the boxes for. The thing that excites me about Sunday, yes, Leeds are dead bad, but we'll know the challenge that lies ahead of us.
Love that.
That is something that obviously has only changed in the last couple of weeks with that kickoff being pushed back. But, you know, pre-game and mid-game and everything about the Everton atmosphere at the moment is fantastic, but I can't even begin to imagine what Goodison Road is going to be like at 3:30, 3:45 if Leeds are 2 or 3 nil down at home to Brighton, or if, you know, if they're drawing the game and they don't look like they're going to get over the line. That is going to be really spine-tingling stuff. We haven't even spoken about our own team or the opposition yet. I think, you know, the league table ultimately does not lie, but I know that my football team is better than Brentford, and I know that we haven't showed that for vast spells of this game, but we are a better football team than them. They have no motivation, obviously, and for that reason, I think we'll put a few past them, Rob. And you know, I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to say these things, and I'm aware that I'm not just saying this to you, but everything that I feel about Everton at the moment, I know what happened last night, and I know that for some that was probably more disappointing than how I'm looking at it or how Frank Lampard's looking at it. But I honestly feel that there's a chance for us to have a really special day at Goodison Park on Sunday.
Seven of 9 points, Mark, feel like we are thriving right now. You know, like, I know that it's such a mini sample, but it's not like we're basing your belief on, we surely will beat Brentford, because even though we've lost the last few, like, the Watford thing didn't totally shake me either. I was disappointed because I thought they're missing seven players. Like, I think you can be disappointed in the result last night and also acknowledge that we have worked hard and done well to put ourselves in a good position going into Sunday. Like, those are all multiple things can be true at once. But I look at the Watford result after a night's sleep and I wake up today and I'm kind of like, well, look, you know, the same team played 3 days later on the road. It's a lot. There's some tiredness there. That point was so crucial. What it means is that the performance was not great, but we didn't get punished for it. You know, like as bad as we could have been, which would have been 0 points in that game. I think that's fine and good. And I think to your point, you can feel good about the fact that you look at our squad and say, I believe they're better than Brentford. But in this particular case, to how you pointed it out, Everton have everything to play for. Brentford do not. Yeah. We're at Goodison. It almost feels to that point like, you know, we got to thrive to survive, man. Like, I think that, you know, oh, wait, that's, there we go. That's the title of the show. I think we have to, you know, we got to do that. But I think that part of that is just there seems to be this collective will amongst the fan base that we're just not going to allow them to not get at least a result on Sunday.
There is. I think the other thing that I think, just from the type of football team that they are, the fact that it is Brentford plays into our hands a little bit more. And the example I'll give you and what I'm trying to say here is that I look at a Crystal Palace team who come up to Goodison a week today, and there's something about that team, and there's something about the in particular the attacking players that they have, that I think, well, even when they've got nothing to play for, there is a dangerous freedom about how they go about games. You know, I've watched them at Selhurst Park recently, and I know that results don't always go their way because they are where they are in the league table, but there is something about Eze and Zahar and all of these attacking players that they have that, quite frankly, sends chills down my spine to think that we might actually need a win against them next Thursday. Mm-hmm. On the flip side with Brentford, I think they're a, you know, I've been blessed by watching Burnley too much this season that I've not seen a great deal of Brentford, but for my money, they are a relatively mechanical, organized, you know what you're going to get sort of Premier League team. Cool. And when you take away that motivational element, they probably do veer into the kind of Downing Tools nature of a Southampton or a Leicester mm-hmm. that we saw at the weekend, where there isn't necessarily that tangible level of natural flair that scares me. There's nothing about mm-hmm. Brentford that scared me when we went to Brentford and got beat by them somehow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not... The one thing I'd say just to echo what you said about Watford, and, you know, people seem to think it's an unimaginable event that we go down to Vicarage Road and get beat, having watched Everton get turned over against Norwich earlier in the season.
It's not unimaginable. It's just like, if they get that result last night, yes, then Sunday is just a celebration, you know. But
maybe in the, you know, the Everton universe, maybe kind of probably needing to win the game suits the whole day and the whole atmosphere a little bit more. Nothing is more dangerous for a bad football team, which Everton have been in recent weeks, knowing that they simply have to show up on Sunday and get a point. That almost a little bit more than having to go and, you know, watch Leeds and see how they get on and then go and get a win. And I know that really doesn't make any form of sense, but for a team,
would it be better for Leeds to get a point on Sunday so that we have to go out and try and win? Or, like,
I want them to score a last minute penalty equalizer just so that Goodison Road is flat as hell before the game and we know we've got to go and win. I do think that Brighton will get something. I do think that the atmosphere will be absolutely incredible regardless. Yeah. And I do think that in every point of the season, and usually towards the latter part of it, there is a moment where teams like us, who, you know, understatement of the season, have not had it all our own way this year, but have certainly got players who have maybe not got something to prove, but they've probably played within themselves for one reason or another this season, you know, be that purely out of poor form or the instructions that they've been given from any one of the managers that have given them this season. That element of release that they hopefully will have, be they a goal or two up in the first half. I know I'm being overly optimistic now, but I think that level of freedom that we have spoken about with other teams, that we might be able to just give someone like Anthony Gordon or Damari Gray, who's just looked like a shell of the football player that he should be in recent times. If we're able to go and let these lads enjoy an hour of football, I think it could be a really special hour at Goodison Park. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I've had a lot of nerves before Everton games this season for obvious reasons, but this is one that I just can't wait to turn up for.
It's interesting to hear anyone who has gone to all these games feel this way in this moment, given all of the Everton that we've lived through. But I love it. No, I think that you're feeling, I think if you're feeling that way, that there is a, you know, we've sat here and talked about what are Brentford's motivations, how good of a squad are they? They're less dangerous than Palace, whatever. I think the best part about all this is that those sorts of things are window dressing, if you will, good window dressing, window dressing you'll take. But ultimately, the best part of this, the best news in all this, is that unlike a couple of weeks ago, everything is now in our hands.
Yes.
And it's not going to require, for instance, that we have to win, you know, we have to get 7 out of these last 9 points to survive. You know, we're in a better position than that because we did the work over these last few weeks that we needed to do. Like, we are, I think that now, to your point, like, we'll, you know, Everton will know right at kickoff what they need to do. Like, it does scare me a little bit to think that they only need a point, and then they're like, yeah, all right, let's just play for a point here. But having said that, not to get too much into the weeds of the game, but does Lampard persist, which I didn't love last night, but you know, I get it. You needed the point, whatever. But does he persist with five at the back on Sunday? Maybe he does. If a point is all that's needed, and you know, Everton have certainly found ways to score a little bit with this. So you know, maybe you just do that and say, hey, this gives us the best chance to win. I personally, and believe me, saying that Seamus Coleman gives me confidence at center half is not a sentence I ever thought I would say. But what I will say is that, given the options of a back four that is just a center half pairing of Mason Holgate, or a back five that is Mason Holgate, Michael Keane, Mason Holgate, or Michael Keane, Mason Holgate, and Seamus Coleman, give me the latter. I'd rather just, with Mikolenko playing better, with Iwobi finding ways to be productive as a player at the right wing back position, though I know that that's not his long term, based on what Lampard wants to ultimately do in the future. I'd still take the bet with that formation and that cast. Now, if Yerry Mina was healthy for Sunday, I'd be like, just go with Mina and Holgate, or go with Mina and Keane, and you'll probably be fine. But I think with a back five, but hell, even Mina was playing in the back five too. Like, I think that for what Everton need at this moment, which is not great to watch, but is what we need at this moment, I'm fine with just taking whatever approach you think is necessary. That we always say pragmatism is a good thing in certain, you know, a lot of the time. Pragmatism is not particularly inspirational if this is a game in October, November, but when it's with these stakes and with this particular scenario, hey, get me a point if that's all I need. Go out and get me 3 points if that's what I need. It seems like Lampard will certainly adapt. So, yeah, look, Mark, if nothing else, I feel better after this conversation and looking at the numbers and looking at the fixtures to go. I think we're in a good position. I think that Sunday seems like a real opportunity, regardless of what happens with Leeds, though. If they win, obviously that'll put more pressure on. But hey, even if they win, just all you can do is just go out and win. Beat Brentford at home. I mean, if we can beat Chelsea at home, you can beat Brentford at home. I think you just you have to go into that with that mentality that it's all in your hands. And I certainly feel better after this conversation, which is really the whole point of Kickabout, is to make me feel good about things. So
I'm excited for the enormous fallout as even Tony gets his third and people race back home to tweet us.
Stop.
This is all
stop. I don't need that after you've just told me we're going to thrash these guys. I don't need that. Though I do, by the way, I do like Ivan Tony quite a bit. Is it Ivan or Ivan?
Well, I mean, it's Kevin Phelan, so, you know, who really cares at this stage?
Who fucking cares, yeah. Well, I feel like if he's not Eastern Bloc, then it's probably like it's English, it's Ivan. And if he's Eastern Bloc, he's Ivan. No. Well, Markel, just like we've wanted Everton to put in, a full 90 minutes, look at us. We have just put in a quality max effort 90 minutes here. I know we don't do this. Hey, guys, I know we don't do this every week anymore, but Mark and I will. I think it's pretty safe to say, Mark, throughout the summer, we'll probably do this a little bit here and there. I don't think we'll ever go. We're not going to totally go away, but we have thoroughly enjoyed this. I hope you guys have enjoyed listening to your old buddies, Mark and Rob, return and talk about the dark magic that is Everton Football Club. yeah, let's go get it Sunday, Mark. And I will probably be at some point. Gosh, we have two home games left. I don't know that I'll be on post match again until Arsenal, maybe. And you know, even if I'm not on that, I'm sure we'll be shifting gears to transfers at some point or whatever. But for everyone listening, those who are going to Goodison, those who will be watching from abroad, hey, we need you this Sunday. There is the collective hive mind that comes into play here, and the football club has needed you the last few weeks. Everyone has really delivered on that, and I'm certainly hopeful that we can do enough on Sunday, things go right, and we can push this thing over the line, and we can begin focusing on hating Everton again, like we ought to, right, Mark? So for Mark Mosey, I'm mostly joking. For Mark Mosey and myself, Rob Vera, and the entire Blue Room dysfunctional family, we will see you guys next time, whenever that may be, for more Kickabout. Take care.
Dear gas prices, go take a hike. Toyota is the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. The Toyota hybrid lineup brings efficiency with power and savings with style. Not to mention top tech to help keep you connected. Plush premium interiors and the most advanced Toyota safety features. So, now you know who you're talking to. Toyota, the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. With a hybrid or electric vehicle built for every driver. Seriously, dear gas prices, do you really think you could stand in our way? Think again. Toyota Hybrids. Find yours at Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Based on manufacturer estimates, CY 2000 through 2021 sales.
Sports Social Podcast Network.